This is The Huddle.
This is not just, this is what we do.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
Presented by DUIHeroes.com.
The Huddle.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. We are joined now by NFL analyst. You can hear him on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. It is Robert Turbin. Turbo, what's up?
Hey, how's everybody doing?
We're good. I mean, it's a Wednesday huddle, obviously, given Thanksgiving. I you know what I'm going to do before we get into any football talk? I have to ask Turbo the absolute best Thanksgiving side, because we're in a big disagreement here on the show.
Are you guys trying to decipher between macaroni and cheese? Or,
you know, like, I would go mac and cheese. Okay, I would go mac and cheese as a second. I said stuffing first. I said stuffing first.
I would go with stuffing. Stuffing is mine.
Thank you.
That's my answer.
Jake and I hate stuffing, and also Stacy says that it's that gravy is not considered like a.
It's not a side.
A side or anything. Of course
it
is.
It's like ketchup.
Not a side.
Thank
I agree
you.
With Stacy. No,
let's bring
I
on Robert.
Turbo,
every
you can't
week.
Have Thanksgiving without gravy. It is the quintessential aspect of a Thanksgiving
best
meal.
Best guest I've ever had on the huddle.
Yeah, but you're not going to eat gravy by itself.
Thank
it's going to
you.
Be on something. That's like
maybe.
That's like yeah. Like for me, I like stuffing, right? But I have to have cranberry sauce with it. But I wouldn't say cranberry sauce is like a side by itself.
Well, I agree with you because you don't put cranberry on everything. You put gravy on nearly everything.
Robert, you're making too much sense for Jake right now. He can't handle.
I know I'm making too much sense. I'm sorry.
All right. All right, Dave.
I think lesser of Turbo.
No,
I don't
no,
want to.
Never, never.
Oh, I'm teasing. All right.
So let's go ahead and look ahead to this game against the Washington football team. It's going to be on the road. While we have you here, I'm actually really excited because I wanted to get your opinion about Alex Collins. Just you know, from someone who kind of knows what the game should look like. What do you make of him just as a whole? And a question that Dave asked us earlier that I thought was great, I'll throw it to you, is can this team really like win with Alex Collins as a starter?
Well, I think given the opportunity, yes, they can win with Alex. I think the thing that we've seen with Alex throughout this season is the more opportunities that he has throughout a football game to carry the ball, the better he gets. He actually gets better as the game goes. He tends to start to find his rhythm once he, you know, starts to get big chunk of carries and get some carries play after play, you know, some plays in a row. And so with that, I think you can win.
Well, and Turbo, tell us about that as a running back, because, you know, I've said this before about Alex Collins. I think he's a rhythm player, and you mentioned that word. For a running back, how important is that? And then how many carries do you need to get into a rhythm?
Yeah, I think it's going to be different for everybody. That's a good question. Every back is different, and everybody has a different running style, and it takes a different you know, everybody's different as it pertains to how the game comes to them. But I think for Alex and for me, I was like that too. The more carries you get, the better you start to feel a good rhythm and have a good sense of what the defense is trying to do and how they're trying to stop you. I think once you get to about double-digit carries, and that could be 10, sometimes that can be 12 or 15. But I think even more important than that is getting carries in a row.
Yeah.
You know, first down, second down, third down, and that's how you really get to gauge how different defenses are game planning against you and trying to stop you.
Now, Turbo, when you look at this team and you look at the offense and everything that they have struggled with, it's really frustrating and hard when you don't have an identity. And, you know, the Seahawks offense, it's been very perplexing and confusing because, all right, you know, no matter if you're struggling or if you have guys injured, as long as you have an identity, you know what you can fall back on. And, you know, Turbo, can you just speak to, as a player, what that means for everyone when they have a firm understanding as to what their offense is supposed to be centered and focused around?
Yeah, I mean, when you have an identity, you know who you are. When you know who you are, you know what you want to do and how you want to attack. And then you avoid, from an offensive perspective, you avoid defenses dictating what it is you can and can't do. You know, a team that has an identity, a lot of times in these meetings that we're having in our game plan is, yeah, you want to adjust and make adjustments to what your opponent is doing to you, but you don't want it to completely dictate how you're going to run your style of play offensively. We're talking about offense right now. And so we have an identity. It doesn't matter. We'll sit in these meetings and we say, you know, this is what we're going to do against them, as opposed to saying, this is what we're going to do because they do this. And it's just a different mindset, and a different approach when you know who you are.
Hey, Turbo, I think when a team has three wins, a lot of pretty solid play by certain players gets overlooked, right? Because the whole team is struggling. Is there anyone, it could be on offense, but I was assuming defensively or special teams where you look at him and say, you know what, this guy's doing some good stuff right now and not enough people are talking about it?
Yeah, you know what? I think DJ Dallas is returning the ball well when he gets the opportunity, putting the offense in good field position. Obviously, our punter is chaining the field week in and week out. He's doing a fantastic job. And special teams, it's funny you mentioned special teams, and I go right to special teams because it's the easiest part of the game to overlook. It's so easy to go offense and defense real quick. But I think our special teams, aside from a few missed field goals, has overall been really solid for our team and given us good field position offensively. And then, you know, obviously the rookie was really impressive, Trey Brown, before his injury. But, you know, to come back from an injury and not even really play in the beginning of the season and then get an opportunity and perform the way that he did before going down is pretty impressive, especially for a rookie. Usually rookies need a lot of practice time, more practice time than others. And then to not start the season on the field can sometimes be really tough to just jump in there, you know, a quarter through the season. So for him to be able to do that and play the way that he did, I thought was really impressive.
Hey, Robert, I was I had to hang around and listen to your guys' postgame show in person because I locked my keys in my car. But
not because he wasn't happy to.
But, you know, one of the things that that we were just talking about, I think you guys were talking about it in the postgame, Gerald Everett, just that, the one where he breaks two, three tackles, he ends up getting plowed on the play. But, I mean, he gets up, he's fired up. You've seen him against Green Bay the last few weeks. Like, that guy's playing with a lot of passion. And, you know, I was thinking that that's something that I feel like you should put that tape on, and that's how I'd like to see this team play. But I don't know, what do you think this team just in general is missing? Because you've been on some really good teams, and, you know, I was just looking at your numbers and in 2012 and 13, and you've been around some really talented players. What do you think this team is missing?
Yeah, I just don't think they have the continuity right now. You know, you mentioned Gerald Everett, how he runs with so much passion. And you see so many great individual efforts, but, you know, for some reason, those individual efforts haven't been able to, you know, kind of come together as a collective one. And, you know, that's why we're in a lot of games, and then we struggle to finish because we just don't have that connectivity. And so, you know, there's one thing where you can play with a lot of passion. And I think from an effort standpoint, our guys are really playing hard. But we just lack execution, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And that's why we can't finish games right now.
All right. He is Robert Turbin. You can hear him on the Seahawks pre and post game show every Seahawks game. But don't forget, this one's on a Monday. Thanks so much, Turbo.
Stay hungry, guys, till Thursday at least.
Thank you. All right, the voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel, joins us next on The Huddle. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. Joining us now, the voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel. Hey, Rabes, how's it going?
Good, Stacey. How are you?
I like
Good.
That we played "Insane in the Membrane" for Rabel as the bumper music. DJ, what are you doing?
No, I thought we were going to get crazy here. You know what I mean? Like, have a lot of fun. Dave said he likes that your intro song was "Insane in the Membrane."
Yeah, I've never heard of that. Who did that? Somebody certainly not from my era. If it wasn't Rosemary Clooney or Bing Crosby, I don't know it.
Oh.
If it wasn't 1950s Christmas music, I don't know who it
is. Oh, shoot. Okay.
Rames, I'm going to start with obviously maybe a quick look back at this past game. It's hard to find much of this season to really love or really be happy about. But if you are going to look at one positive they can try to build on, is there anything you can think of?
Wow. Well, I will. First of all, you got your quarterback back healthy. That's one thing to kind of continue to build back on. He's not there yet, not completely. He's healthy enough to play, but. And I know when he said after the game this week, somebody asked him about what about the rust, and he said there is no rust. Well, you know, I mean, I think it's kind of apparent that there is some rust out there, a little bit. That, you know, you're human, and it's okay to admit that. Missed on some throws, maybe didn't get a couple of the reads that he would have liked to have gotten. But all in all, considering what's happened, that's what you build on. You got your all-world quarterback back. And, yes, it hasn't been what anybody likes, and it's certainly what no one would have expected, especially since he's back on the field. So you start there. I'll go with one of the guys that Dave always talks about, Gerald Everett. I mean, this guy has proven that he can play. He is just not to be tackled. And so he sort of sets the tone, I think, for the offense. And in the style of offense, I believe that Shane Waldron wants to play, the tight ends are very important. Those crossing routes, those underneath routes, those release routes out into the flat, a little wheel route. Keep those guys involved because a guy like Gerald Everett can turn a small play into a big play. So I like both of those things on offense. And on defense, I sort of like the pressure that the big guys are starting to get up front. I don't know that we'll ever be a team that can generate four-man pressure. We just don't have any of those kind of superstar sort of athletes on the edges that can do that. But we're doing a better job at getting some pressure on the quarterback. So I'd look to both of those areas.
Hey, by the way, Rabes, I had a moment. You know, there's that commercial, don't become your parents or whatever. And
yes,
I'm becoming Steve Rabel because I did a podcast with Turbo. And he goes, yeah, you know, I've seen you around doing radio, but I had no idea you played. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of how I go. You know that old man I work with, Steve Rabel, he ran a 4.37 40 at one point. So, yeah, I'm becoming Steve Rabel, and it actually feels pretty good, man. It feels pretty good.
Good, yeah. I was just at the grocery store a little while ago, and a young man who was bagging my groceries said, so did you start in television news?
Yeah.
And I said, well, no, I actually started in sports. Oh, what interested you about sports? I said, well, because I played for my whole life.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No! Yeah.
You know, the kid is like 20 years old. How would he know?
Of course.
I don't know. I stopped playing before his parents were born, for crying out loud.
I know. I hate that now kids, the guys we're talking to, are born after my career.
Oh, they're going to be in the
ended.
2000s.
Yeah. So, but hey, this week, Rabes, Tyler Lockett, after the game, I don't know if you heard this quote, but he was saying how what we're seeing on film is not what we're getting. Like, basically, he was saying that they're not playing the Seahawks the same way they play other teams. I don't know if you heard that quote.
I did.
Yeah. What did you think? I mean, to me, I didn't really know what to think. I thought that could mean lots of things, but, you know, I don't know if it's derogatory or what he meant by that. What did you make of it?
Well, I heard it when he actually said, I was in the room there on Sunday after the game, listening to the guys chat afterwards, and it caught me by surprise as well. And I'm not sure that Tyler meant it the way he said it, the way it came out. You know, these guys are prepared. I don't have a whole lot of doubt about that. Besides, there's only so many things you can do and show. As you get ready for football games. And they've seen Arizona a lot. They know what the Cardinals do on defense. So they might have thrown a couple of new little wrinkles in there or something like that. And maybe it happened on a play or two that seemed to make it stand out more than otherwise it would. But I Pete came back afterwards and said, well, I'm not sure what Tyler was referring to, but as he said, Pete said, I think on Monday, no, we sort of expected, we knew what they were going to do, and they kind of did it. And then I heard Matthew talking this morning, Hasselbeck, and he said basically the same thing. He said, I don't know that I saw a whole lot of new, so I don't know. I just kind of chalk it up to maybe a little bit of frustration,
yeah.
And completely understandable. But I think these guys are, I mean, I think game plans are being drawn up and they're looking at enough film and all that. I think it just comes down to one word, execution. They're just not executing the offense the way it should be.
Raves, I'm right there with you, and I echo Pete, Russ, and Matt, for that matter. I mean, studying these guys, I didn't see one thing on there that really was a big surprise in terms of what they did and what they tried to do from the Arizona game plan. But from Tyler's perspective, it can be frustrating to walk into a situation and say, here's our game plan, or, for example, you know, the calls that are made on in the red zone versus what they actually do and what they've majored in for years and years, and or the things that they've worked on in the offseason, they don't actually get called in a game. I mean, you know, I do think that execution and game planning does come into a factor there, and how frustrating that might be to go into a practice and feel like you have the answers and feel like you've got the right plan as a player, and then to not see those things manifest itself in a game.
Yeah, absolutely, and it affects everybody differently. You know, Tyler Lockett is about as much a team player as anybody I can think of. He is a very thoughtful person, and yeah, we all know that he's just an incredible, fearless football player. And you know, if he believed that's what he saw, that if I'm the offensive coordinator, if I'm the wide receiver coach, I want to sit down and talk to him and tell me, Tyler, what it was that you saw. Tell me what we can do. How can we make sure that this doesn't crop up again? Anything, because I'm all in on Tyler Lockett. I think he's one of the best, not only players but people that I know. Can I throw a quick story at you, Jake, real fast?
Of course.
Talking about not being prepared or being underprepared, and I go back to my rookie season, 1976. We're playing the Rams down in the Los Angeles Coliseum. And they had a guy named Dave Elmendorf, who was a safety, a free safety. Nolan Cromwell was their strong safety, former coach here under Mike. And we come out and we're trying to move the ball down the field. And they're you know, a really good team. Jack Youngblood and Fred Dreyer. I mean, these are great players. And we can't do anything. So we're trying to throw the football. And we had a quarterback who was a former Detroit Lion named Bill Munson, who was playing at toward the end of the game, and he called a slant route to my side. So I run this slant, and I get hammered before the ball ever got there. And Munson screams at me about, hey, you should have broken that off outside. The safety blitzed, and they did a lot of that game. And I said, I had no idea. First of all, I didn't know to look for it because we'd never talked about it. And in the locker room after the game, Jack Patera came over to me, and he said, that was on us. We didn't prepare you for that. We didn't think they'd do it. We didn't prepare you. That's not your fault. And it never happened to me again. I was always aware. But, you know, guys are, they really want to try to do the right thing. And so I'm going to say that Tyler is doing the right thing. Talk it over with your coaches. Now let's come out and execute.
He is the voice of the Seahawks. Steve Rabel joins us every single week for the Huddle. Rabes, always a pleasure. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You guys, too. Sorry I took up all my time telling an old guy story.
That was great, it was, man. Wonderful.
Love that.
Loved it.
Save some for Sunday, buddy.
Thanks.
Oh, well, I'll be there Monday, but if you want to show up on Sunday.
He'll be waiting for you. He's that excited.
See how he is. I try to be nice to him, and he sticks it to me.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Same to you, Rabe. Say hi to Sharon.
Dave, a listener says, if it makes you feel any better, Dave, I'm keeping your playing career memories alive by introducing my kids to Tecmo Super Bowl for the NES. You'll live on in our house.
I remember my kids telling me that I coached. Yeah,
Then
somebody told me at one point, because they delineate, they said, you're black on Tecmo Bowl, and I was like, awesome. That's cool.
Fantastic.
I mean, it was that time
this
of year.
You're living on forever.
Yeah, the kids that I was coaching at Redmond High School, they were all playing Tecmo Bowl, and they're like, and I'm like, how am I as far as the Tecmo Bowl ratings go?
Right.
And they would give me like a 3.4 out of 5 or whatever. I was like, oh, come on, man.
All right, we're going across enemy lines for an opponent preview next on the Huddle. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross, going across enemy lines here for an opponent preview of the Washington football team with John Keim of ESPN. John, how's it going?
It's going all right. How are you guys?
Well, not great, John. No, it's fine. We're all having fun. Everyone's happy heading into a holiday weekend. And obviously, there's plenty to be grateful for with this team, even if it's been a really, really tough season. And we're all still trying to figure it out here. But honestly, I'm still trying to figure out parts of Washington's team, specifically the defense. What's been going on that side of the ball this year?
Well, I'm kind of trying to figure it out as well, because there's been an abrupt change. But the reality is, early in the year, there were, you know, if you look at each group individually, the defensive line, even though as talented as it was, you still had some young defensive ends, Chase Young and Montez Sweat. And while I thought individually several of them were playing well, collectively I didn't think they were playing well as a group and doing little things that might be better for team football rather than individual stats. That has improved. The secondary had a lot of new parts, that you had Landon Collins coming back from an Achilles injury, but he'd only played four or five games in the defense last year. So he was kind of new, but, you know, coming back from an injury. Then you have Bobby McCain, safety, new. William Jackson, corner, new. Benjamin St. Just, a draft pick, new. So there were a lot of new parts to mesh, and I think it took him a few minutes to get the trust and communication down. Now what you see, and the other thing is, they're playing Landon Collins more as a traditional safety, where he was back a lot, sometimes up in the box. Now he's a little bit more, probably, like, for lack of a better comparison, like more of a Jamal Adams type, where he's kind of playing much more of a hybrid role. And, you know, sometimes linebacker, sometimes safety. That has made a difference. And so I think the safety play has been a lot better. The linebacker play has been inconsistent, but I think what you're seeing lately are three different position groups each getting better, but especially the front and the back end.
Hey, John, tell us about the personality of Taylor Heinicke. He looks like he's a scrappy guy. I mean, we're looking at his numbers, but as far as his personality, his leadership, what he means to that team?
I mean, he's got a little bit of a swagger for a guy who was an undrafted free agent and who was on in an Old Dominion University classroom a year ago at this time.
Yeah.
And so when he's been an underdog his whole life and he's always overcome it. So I think he kind of plays with that little bit of a confident swagger, knowing that you may underestimate me, but I always come through in the end. That's kind of how he plays. And I think that grit, determination, whatever you want to call it, does rub off. Now, he's had to grow into being a leader. I don't know that I'd call him a great leader at this point, because I don't think he's played enough to be that. I think he could develop into one down the road. But right now, I think I think for him, he's only started, 11 or 12 games in the NFL? But I think he's becoming more of a leader, whereas I think guys are starting to trust him a little bit more and see what he can do. I mean, he definitely gets away with some things on the field where you're a little bit surprised, like, well, how did he not throw a couple more picks in that game? But the last few weeks, he's been really good. And I think some of that stuff is starting to build. And you do see the mindset, I think, guys gravitate toward.
Now, one of the things that you look at as well when it comes to the Washington football team that has really been impressive to me has been how good they've been in their rush defense. I know they've struggled in the passing game, but what has been one of the big reasons why they've been so good in that area specifically?
Well, I think the defensive line has been good. John Allen has been terrific. Chase Young was not getting to the passer, but he was playing the run well. Now, obviously, he's out for the year now. One of the guys who replaced him is James Smith Williams, who is good against the run. So you start there. I think what you're seeing are what you'd see a lot of, too much of, in the first part of the season are two guys in one gap, which means that one gap is unfilled. That's where the back would hit. So you're getting, you're seeing less of that. Some of that is you have a rookie linebacker in Jamin Davis who is getting better, and you had a second or third year linebacker, Cole Holcomb, who also is getting better. Neither one of them is a true middle linebacker. I think that sometimes gets them in trouble. but I think they've done a better job at reading and being in their gaps. And I think the last thing with that, I go back to the secondary. Landon Collins has done a really good job in the box area, and I think that's made a difference as well.
Hey, John, just a hypothetical here for fun. Let's say that you were to tell someone who is playing this team, like an opponent, how they could beat the Washington football team, asking for a friend. What would be like maybe a weakness or maybe a plan to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I would first of all, you want to keep Taylor Heinicke in the pocket. He's not a pure pocket passer. He's going to hurt you. He's a little bit like, you know, I mean, he's certainly not Russell Wilson, but you know that Russell likes to get out of there and he can create, he's dangerous outside there. Well, so is Heinicke. You know, he can extend plays and get away from guys, keep them in the pocket. I think if you stop the run game for them, get them in a lot of third and longs, then you're going to be okay. And they've done well running the ball the last couple of weeks, more committed to it. I think then with the run game commitment, you want to get ahead. And I think I would still test. Like early in the year, you could test a secondary deep. There was always a blown coverage. I think I would try and target William Jackson if they're in zone coverage, because that's a weakness of his still. And, you know, I would probably get, I don't know, you know, you have to have the run game, but get them moving a little bit and maybe some shifting and all that to test their gap discipline on the run game.
Hey, John, we were talking, I was raving about Ron Rivera. I actually played against him when he was at Cal and I was at Stanford, and was telling how much these guys, how much I always respected him. And, you know, he's kind of become I feel like he's sort of the savior of the franchise, just because, you know, you thought about Dan Snyder and, you know, however you feel about that. I just feel like Ron Rivera kind of overwhelms everybody with just his honor and just the way, you know, he's such a good man. It feels like he's just the ultimate leader, and is kind of, does this team kind of reflect him?
To a degree, I think it does. I think one of the things he obviously came into a very difficult situation. I mean, yeah. I think it's a difficult situation anytime you come here as a coach, because there isn't a foundation of success typically. But it was obviously a lot harder for him, because you come in, you got the pandemic, you have the riots, you have the name change, then you have the sexual harassment stuff.
Yeah.
And it was one thing after another, and to calm and steady the ship during all that, and you don't really have a quarterback that's like, you know, there are other franchises, they're probably in disarray, but they have a great quarterback, and so maybe it doesn't matter. You know, you don't see it quite as much. So I think some of this stuff stood out. But I think his approach, I think he has a very consistent approach with his philosophy, with his dealing with players. I think that helps. I think he doesn't, you know, he's really good at not calling them out unless he gets to a point where it feels like I've got no choice, but it usually takes a long time to get there, and he's usually worked with the player behind the scenes before then. And so I think there is a reflection of that. And I think you're starting to see a little bit more, too, because I think guy who's a former linebacker, you expect him to coach a tough team, right?
Yeah.
I think they're becoming a more tough physical team lately. And so I think that's probably a little bit more of a reflection of his personality as well.
He is John Keim, covers the Washington football team for ESPN. John, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yep. Have a good weekend. All right, joining us next for our final segment, Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle. We're going to get some final updates from him and then share some final thoughts before we head into a holiday weekend. Don't go anywhere.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. Joining us now to help us close things out. It's Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm good, Stacey. How are you guys all doing?
Good. Looking forward to a lot of Thanksgiving meals, even though there are horrific Thanksgiving food opinions on this show that we don't need to call out. I mean,
it's okay.
No, I want to hear.
Okay,
hear
well, sure,
that.
Sure.
What's
you don't
worst?
Have to.
Give me the worst one.
Well, here's the worst one.
Dave
is
and
the,
I think.
No.
Dave and I think that all gravy right. is the quintessential aspect about a
no,
Thanksgiving
no, no, no,
meal.
No, 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 no. You are not phrasing this correctly. Jake said gravy is the best Thanksgiving dish, to which Dave agreed.
Well, I'd say it's the most important.
Yes, thank you.
You can't eat dry turkey, Boyle.
You just can't.
You
can't eat
thank
dry turkey.
You.
It's important, but it's basically a glorified condiment.
You could have Thanksgiving
glorified
without gravy.
Condiment.
It wouldn't be as good. But.
Oh, my gosh.
Believe me,
Boyle.
I like gravy, and it is important, but it's not its own dish. You're not going to just sit down and eat some. Well, maybe you would, but I'm not going to sit down and just eat some gravy.
If turkey and, let's say, like potatoes are like the offensive defensive lines, you got to make sure you have those. Like, right, like turkey's like in the trenches. Then the gravy is like, you know, your number one top tier wide receiver. Do you need that?
No, no. The gravy, is Russell Wilson. Gravy is Russell Wilson.
No.
Wow. Both of you are fighting what you will do yourself. You will take the gravy and
yes.
you will put it all over your Thanksgiving
That's right.
dish,
That's right.
your turkey,
right.
your mashed potatoes,
Correct.
And maybe something else because it's that good and that important to a Thanksgiving
yeah.
meal.
Yeah, and like
I guess I would say this. For me to consider something a dish, it's something you could eat theoretically on its own,
Thank
and
you.
I'm not going to grab a spoon and just eat some gravy.
Well, yeah, we're not speaking for Wyman.
It's
here.
Still really important, and I would say just like Russell Wilson, it covers lots of warts, covers some of the bad food, it covers everything.
Well, let's start with Russell Wilson here, John. He hasn't had his best stretch of games, been a little up, a little down, and he's usually a model of consistency. Are there any common themes that you're finding in some of his struggles?
I don't know about common themes because I think, you know, in that first game, there's just some more uncharacteristic throws that are just uncharacteristically off. And we saw a little bit of that last week, but you go back and look at some of the throws that they weren't connected on. He was like that deep ball to DK Metcalf. I mean, you can question the decision because it was well covered, but that was a damn near perfect throw, just launched downfield, like what we're used to seeing with him. So, you know, I think physically it seems like he's getting better and throwing the ball well, but obviously the numbers show it wasn't a good game for him or that offense as a whole. You know, there are some times the receivers could have helped him and weren't hanging on to balls. There are some times maybe he didn't see things or just didn't get rid of it in time, leading to sacks or incompletions. So I think the blame can kind of be spread around. But when you just talk about, you know, some things that looked a little more concerning in Green Bay, I thought his throws just sometimes looked more off, whereas he looked better just throwing the ball, which I think, you know, big picture-wise, we're talking about the improvement they need to see offensively. That, to me, that part's more encouraging.
Hey, John, I'll ask you the same question I asked Rabel, and I like to hear everybody's opinion on what you think Tyler Lockett meant when he said, and Pete clarified it because somebody asked him about it, and he goes, well, you're assuming he's right. But, you know, Tyler said, we're not seeing the same defenses. They're not playing us the way they play other teams. What did you make from that?
It is interesting because, you know, he said that and then Russell Wilson kind of said that wasn't as much the case. Pete Carroll, I think he was just kind of more being glib with that. You know, you assume he's right because then he followed that up immediately and said, you know, I'm not going to speak on that because I didn't hear exactly what Tyler said. So I don't think he was saying that necessarily to give Tyler a hard time or anything. But, obviously there's some things defense are doing that seem to be confusing the offense because it has been a struggle on third down, as everyone in the world has noted, has not been good at all. So, I don't know, maybe Tyler Lockett's just sometimes sees things a little differently than other people, and that's fine as long as they're all on the same page and is working. And, you know, they got a lot to clean up, and I don't read a ton necessarily just in those comments what's been said by individual guys, but you know, the overall body of work needs to improve for sure.
John, this is the first time that they've ever been in this situation. Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, a lot of these, you know, older veterans here in Seattle with this particular organization having to really talk about a 3-7 team with really, you know, hardly any playoff hopes. Have you noticed a change or a different tone in the way that they're talking, the way that they're conversating to the media as they, not post-game, but now once they're starting to talk about the media and the way that they're getting into their week, day-to-day, you know, preparations?
No, and I think that's a good distinction because obviously post-game people are going to be more down and more frustrated right after a loss. But no, in terms of what we hear from players, you know, during the week, both this week and last week and after other losses, I mean, that's a big part of Pete Carroll's messaging. And I think a big part of what has led this team over the years to be really good year after year is they're really good at putting the past behind them, good or bad, you know, whether it's coming off a big win or a loss, or just focusing on the task at hand. You know, the players we heard from today, guys like Bobby Wagner and Ryan Neal, just seemed, you know, really positive, and everybody's still got the mentality of this team still has time to turn around. We can win a lot of games. Pete Carroll even made the comment of, he was asked about 3-7 affecting the future of things with him and Russell Wilson, all that. And he said, yeah, I'm more interested in how going 7-0 is going to affect things. So everybody here is still confident. The question is, you know, have they dug too big of a hole to get out of, even if they do get hot?
Very last question here. Trey Brown going to have season-ending surgery. Already had surgery, it looks like.
Yeah.
So I'm both disappointed and pleasantly surprised. I'm disappointed for him and how his season ended, but pleasantly surprised because I'm shocked that I'm asking you a question of, without Trey Brown, what's this group going to do for depth and kind of what's the look of the group moving forward? So who are some of the guys that you're looking at thinking, okay, it's really on him now?
Yeah, it is really unfortunate. As you said, nobody necessarily coming to the season expecting the fourth round pick to come in and be a starter and do everything he's done. He's been so good, so it is a blow to lose him. You know, the assumption is Sidney Jones is the next man up. He was actually starting in that left cornerback role before Trey Brown took over, and he played well last week, you know, starting that game for DJ Reed and then moving over, taking over for Trey Brown. So, you know, he's the guy there. The question then becomes, you know, is DJ Reed able to get back this week? Pete Carroll did say he would practice today, but there's no injury report, so they don't really have to give a lot of details until the injury reports start coming out tomorrow with the Monday game. So, you know, it's pretty obvious if Reed plays, we're looking at Reed and Sidney Jones. But if Reed can't go, then you probably have to get Bless Austin going again. You know, Pete Carroll said he was solid in that first game. It was his first time out, so he'll have room to grow. But, you know, those are kind of the next guys up right now.
All right. He is Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle. John, have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you all.
Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, John.
Oh, don't humor them, John. Don't
humor them.
All right. He is John Boyle. And wrapping things up here, you guys, it's going to be a really tough one against the Washington football team because it felt tough for Seattle to get wins this year, but we know they have it in them. So for Dave Wyman, for Jake Heaps, I'm Stacey Rost. You guys have a wonderful and safe holiday weekend. We're thankful for all of you listening. And don't forget, it's going to be a Monday night game, this one against the Washington football team. This has been The Huddle.
The Huddle.
Presented by DUIHeroes.com.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.